Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show is a special best of episode for New Year's Eve, December 31st, 2016. This is episode 1351. Enjoy. Before we get into the episode, I probably should explain what you're about to hear here. We aren't doing a fresh show. We didn't do a fresh show this weekend, and we won't do one next weekend, to give time off to everybody who works so hard on the Tech Guy show, our producers, our staff, and me. But we didn't want to leave you without a podcast, so we put together some highlights from the year 2016, some of our best moments. It's really fun to listen to. I hope you'll enjoy it. And we'll see you in 2017 with a brand new show. Don't forget, January 7th and 8th, Tech Guy is back live on the air every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific time. That's 1 to 4 Eastern right here on Twit. Enjoy. And Happy New Year. Huge amount of interest, of course, in the court decision that Apple must decrypt an iPhone owned, actually not owned, but used by one of the San Bernardino shooters in that terrible, terrible mass killing a few months ago. I think, and I'm sure you'll correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first reported fatality in an autonomous vehicle. And of course, very sad. And I don't know. I think the LA Times had a story today revealing more. I am working off the blog posting from Tesla because it was a Tesla Model S. According to Tesla, the vehicle was on a divided highway with autopilot engaged. A tractor trailer drove across the freeway perpendicular to the oncoming traffic. And this is what Tesla says. Neither autopilot nor the driver noticed the white side of the tractor trailer against a brightly lit sky. The brake was not applied, either by the autopilot. So the autopilot failed, did not see the oncoming truck, nor did the driver, apparently, trusting the autopilot, or maybe not paying attention. And it plowed into the truck, and the driver was killed. Pokemon Go. So the world is now divided into two groups of people. Those who have heard the word Pokemon Go, and those who have heeded it, and those who have not. And those who have not live in blissful ignorance of the new game that is sweeping the world. Well, U.S., New Zealand, and Australia, so far. So far. I've talked to people from a variety of places. In New Zealand, they're going crazy over it. In college campuses all over the U.S., roving bands of Pokemon Go players. So it's official. We mentioned it last show because it seemed like it was almost official. Now it is. Yahoo has been sold. Yahoo has been sold to Verizon. Verizon, I get the feeling Verizon's kind of like one of those collectors that's collecting vintage, you know, computers, antiques, because they bought AOL. And now they got Yahoo. You know, I understand Alta Vista's going real cheap. You could get them for a song. While you're at it, why don't you buy Polaroid and Westinghouse? You could just have a whole, you could have a complete set. Big story this week, kind of shocked me. Samsung's Galaxy Note 7, which I had recommended, my mistake, can explode when charging. Samsung says it's just some limited bad batteries. Not all of the phones apparently got them. But who wants to take a chance? 35 Galaxy Note 7s have exploded, might be a strong word. Burst into flame. the pictures I've seen, you know, you don't want to get a burning lithium ion battery is a terrible thing. So some Samsung phones are blowing up again. Did you see that? The Note 7s? There's at least... Well, if we heard one, Southwest Airlines guy was on a flight, was in his pocket, the Note 7. But the thing that's scary, it was a replacement Note 7. the one of the supposedly fixed Note 7s, started feeling it, felt it start getting warm, took it out of his pocket, threw it on the ground, started smoking. They evacuated the plane. Fortunately, it was still at the gate. Evacuated the plane. The phone had not only burned itself, it burnt through the carpet down to the subflooring on the plane. Wow. The new iPhones are here. The new iPhones are here. The new iPhones are here. Oh, I'll tell you one thing that's missing. Ain't no headphone jack. Yeah, that's gone. Oh, shoot. I forgot my dongle. I can't listen to my headphones today. Aw. You need a special headphones that use the lightning port or a dongle, which they very generously put one in the box. Well, I had to pull some shenanigans, but I was able to get the new Google Pixel phone. It came out officially. It was announced, of course, a couple of weeks ago, but it started arriving in people's homes on the 20th, on Thursday. And I've been able to play with it for a couple of days to give you my thoughts. First of all, it's going to be compared to the Apple's iPhone 7 because they're roughly the same price. They're the flagship phones from the flagship creators of iOS for Apple and Android for Google. But where you'll really see the biggest difference is in the artificial intelligence, the assistant. Apple has Siri. Google has this new Google Assistant. And Google Assistant is remarkable. It is light years ahead of Siri. So if this is something that's important to you, the ability to talk to your phone and have it talk back to you and even do things for you, Apple is behind, and I think probably irrevocably behind in this race. Microsoft announces its first desktop PC on Wednesday. On Thursday, Apple announces three new laptop computers. It's been crazy. And actually, I'm very intrigued by the Surface Studio that Microsoft announced, a 28-inch all-in-one desktop. Now, that by itself isn't particularly innovative. We've seen all-in-ones, well, starting with Apple 10 years ago. Remember the one that looked like a lamp? That was 10 years ago. With the articulating arm and the screen that would stay where you wanted it. And then, you know, Microsoft announces kind of the same thing. Yeah, but kind of different. So 28 inches, very high resolution screen. And unlike any Apple product, Apple Macintosh product, it's touch. It also does something unusual. It's hinged. It's a, you know, hinged single screen. All in one means everything's in the, you know, the computer itself. The monitor's part of the computer. But the hinging allows it to lie flat like a drafting table at a 20-degree angle. So you could actually kind of lean over it, hunch over it like as you would in the old days with a pen, protractor, pencil, T-square, and use it as a drafting table or drawing table. Britain just passed what they call the Snoopers Charter. The most extreme surveillance law ever passed in a democracy. The current Prime Minister, Theresa May, introduced it before she was Prime Minister. The Prime Minister at the time said under no circumstance. Well, at first he said, hey, I kind of like it. But then he heard the outcry and said, well, no, we're not going to pass that. She's tried two times to pass this law. 4 years later, it was passed on Wednesday by both houses of Parliament. The law will force internet service providers in Britain to record every internet customer's web history in real time for a year, every place you visit. Discourages encryption, things like email encryption, which I've recommended. In fact, I will sometime during the show tell you how to do. Gives law enforcement and intelligence agencies the power to hack into computers and devices of any citizen. It essentially gives government in Britain access to every bit of digital data, period. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's talk high tech. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Who should I address first?
Again, we're going to spend someone's money.
Yay.
And the VR. He wants a VR machine. And since you've played with all of them, I think you could probably get
a VR machine. All right, Kim, thank you. This is Rick in Hesperia, California. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
I'm looking at VR, different VR machines.
Yes.
Right now, I have a PlayStation 4, and I also have an iBuyPower gaming computer, so I can go either route. I can go with the Vive, I can go with Oculus, I can go with PlayStation 4, and just trying to figure out what the best route to go is, or if I should wait.
So VR, the idea is that you put on this visor and generally. The visor, you know, is like a blindfold, takes over all your vision. There's two screens in the visor, and they're pretty close to your eyes. You're looking at those screens. And the visor has built into it the accelerometers that tell it when you turn your head, when you look up, when you look down. So it will change the display as you move your head, giving you the illusion that you're actually somewhere looking around. And it could be quite a convincing illusion. And to the point where we were playing with the Oculus Rift, which is a Facebook-owned company, and I was putting it on some people, and there's just a demo that comes with the Rift where you're standing on the edge of a building, like a skyscraper, and you're looking down. And to a person, everybody who tried this out went, whoa, and step back. So it is an effective illusion. It is an illusion, and there are some negatives to it. Some of these devices, the PlayStation VR and the Vive, also have devices you hold in your hands. That's really useful because if you think about it, if you can't hold something, it's hard for you to pick up things and move around. The Oculus Rift gets around that with using a gamepad, as does Gear VR from Samsung or Google's Cardboard, which are the lower-end versions. Have you tried any of the cheap ones? Like the Google Cardboard is really cheap. You can get it for, you know, $5.
Yeah, I tried the Google Cardboard. I actually tried the Samsung Gear. I also tried the Oculus. The Oculus is really cool.
Yeah. It's good to try these before you buy because they are expensive solutions. The least expensive, of course, besides Cardboard and Gear, which aren't really fully immersive gaming platforms, the least expensive would probably be the Sony since you already have a PlayStation 4. The negative on the Sony, and I've played with all of them. We own all of them. The negative on the Sony PlayStation VR is the Move controllers, which really weren't designed for VR. And it's using the camera that came with the PlayStation, you know, the older camera. So, but I don't find that really a disadvantage. One thing to note is the PlayStation VR is designed to be played seated. Oculus lets you stand up, but you can't move around too much. You mostly can just lean and sway. Only the Vive of all of these gives you a playing area. Now, the disadvantage of that is you have to have a fairly large space, like a 6-foot by 6-foot space, to set up the two spatial recognition projectors that you're at either corner of that space. And so, but if you have the space for it, that's the most vivid experience because you're moving around. Then there's the final piece of the puzzle is games. Which games, you know, because, you know, if you choose between an Xbox and a PlayStation, really the choice comes down to what games are available, you know, which has the better games, right? Well, ultimately, that's going to be the same thing for a VR solution. I think, sadly, the Oculus has the better games. I think the Vive is the better technology. Oculus will be coming out with controllers this year, hand controllers. They showed the Oculus Touch controllers. It's a lot of money, though, when you add this all up. We're talking $700 or $800.
All right. The only reason I was leaning towards PlayStation was because I figured that they
already have it.
I have the PlayStation 4. Yeah, you're right. But I also have a gaming computer.
That's true. But even with the gaming computer, it's $800 for the Vive.
Right, yeah.
So I think precisely because you're already a PlayStation VR user, they're coming out with 30 games, 50 by the end of the year. I've played a couple of them. They're really fun. It is seated, but in some ways that makes it better because you're going to be less likely to get nauseated. That's one of the problems with these is for about 10% of the population, you're just going to get nauseated. There's nothing you can do about it. You're going to use it and you're going to go, I'm queasy and stop.
I read something about the latency on the PlayStation being different and making it so you don't get quite as sick.
Yeah. Yeah, it's lower resolution. There's tricks to play, but in my opinion, all these guys say latency because that's something they can fix. What they don't talk about is what I think is the real cause of the nausea, which is the difference between where your eyes are focusing and where your eyes are converging. And in our, you know, monkey minds, if those two don't match, we ate some bad mushrooms and we better throw up. Seriously. And that's something that's very hard to fix. So they don't like to talk about that. I think all of them make you nauseous, or it makes certain people nauseous. The answer to your question, I think since you already have a PS4, there'll be better games, it'll be more fun, it's less expensive. That's going to be a great way to get your feet wet. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, Brennan, on the line from Dallas, Texas. Hey, Brennan. Brennan.
Hey.
How you doing? Sup. What's up with the kids today, huh, Brennan? Tell me, what's with you kids?
I'm trying to figure out how to learn code.
I can't hear you very well. Are you? What are you on? Are you on one of those football phones? Did your mom get that because she subscribed to Newsweek?
No.
There. That's better. Are you on a cell phone?
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to kind of talk into the hole on the phone. I don't know why that is. What can I do for you, Brennan?
I'm wondering what is the best place to learn code.
Oh, you want to be a programmer?
Yeah.
You want to do it for a living or because it's fun or why?
Every reason possible.
Oh, I love you, Brennan. This is good. So there are lots of good reasons. You could be that guy who sold the iPhone a hack for $1.3 million. That'd be a good reason. 1.3 million reasons. But more importantly, because it's fun, right? It's a really great thing to learn. And even if you didn't do this for a living, in fact, maybe even especially, because once you start doing anything for a living, it's not as much fun as it was when it was a hobby. I could tell you this. But even if you don't do it for a living, learning how to write computer code is a wonderful thing. It gives you a much deeper understanding of how it works, so you'll always benefit from that. But you also, it teaches you a kind of a rigor of mind. It's actually good for your thinking. It's one of the reasons, you know, people always say, I remember I said this when I was in school, what do I have to learn algebra for? I'm never going to do any algebra in life. And you know what? I didn't. Or geometry, or trigonometry, or calculus. But what it teaches you is how to think. And nowadays, coding is really a form of math that has the same benefit and some real concrete skills. I knew people who would never run anybody else's program. They would only run programs they wrote. There's a guy, I really admire this guy. He says, if anything takes me more than 30 seconds to do, I write a computer program. The computer program sends my girlfriend a birthday card and flowers every year. It does everything, so he doesn't have to think about it. It takes 2 minutes to write the program, but then he saves 30 seconds every time it runs. So you want to learn. Do you like Minecraft?
I play it.
Yeah. You're not addicted.
I'm a big fan.
Yeah. What do you do? What do you like to do with computers right now?
Just watch some technology YouTube videos.
Yeah. We want to move you. So here's the thing, and I appreciate your instinct. We want to take you from being a consumer to a maker, okay? From somebody who eats and drinks and sleeps YouTube to somebody who makes stuff. It could be making a YouTube video. It could be writing computer software. One of the reasons I asked about Minecraft is one of the best ways to learn, if you're into Minecraft. I don't know if you're into it enough to make this worthwhile, but you go out and get a Raspberry Pi, $35 computer. Borrow from somebody a mouse and a keyboard and an old monitor. Now you got a computer running. It's running, believe it or not, it's running Linux, which is great. But you can run Windows on it, but it's better to run Linux on it. So $35 plus used mouse, keyboard, and monitor. It comes with Minecraft, but even better, it comes with the software that you can use to write programs. And it's fun because you write programs in Minecraft like you could build a house with a push of the button. Or you could build a giant rainbow made out of watermelon. Or you could dig a hole all the way down to bedrock. My favorite one, and I'll tell you the book you can get to do this. The book costs more than the computer. But I'll tell you the book that you can get to do this. He taught me how you can move around leaving a trail of dynamite behind you. And then you hit it and it all explodes. Or better yet, it explodes as you're leaving it. It destroys. It's so fun. Anyway, there's a book called How to Program with Minecraft. That would be one good way to start. Anybody who's a parent who's listening, $35 for the Pi, the Raspberry Pi. Or if you've got a computer, you don't need to get a Raspberry Pi. It works on Windows or Mac or Linux. And this book, it's from No Starch Press. The author is Craig Richardson. We'll put a link in the show notes. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
I have a Raspberry Pi, and I put Windows 10 the Internet of Things.
Nice. Take iOS 10, take Windows 10 off of it and put Raspbian back on, okay? That's the default operating system. So if you have your noobs installed, just next time check Raspbian. Because if you want to learn to program, there's another...
It can blink.
Huh?
It can blink.
It can blink? You taught it to blink?
No, it didn't have any software with it.
Yeah, oh, it can't blank. Yeah, no, and then you have to, you download Noobs, N-O-O-B-S, which is the startup thing, and you put that on a little micro SD card. You must have one or it wouldn't boot. And then when you boot it up, it says, okay, what do you want to install on here? One of the things is Windows 10 IoT, but you can also install Raspbian. There's some other operating systems, too. Install Raspbian. That is a version of Linux. It's good for you to learn Linux. If you really want to be a programmer, you need to know how a command line interface works. There are a lot of good ways to learn programming. This is a fun one because one of the things about programming is it's nice to have it do something. So Minecraft becomes this universe. You don't have to play with anybody, but you can use it like Legos. You can write a program to build something. And that's a really good way to learn. So that's a good start, one way to start. If you don't want to spend any money, you have a computer now. Well, actually, you have a Raspberry Pi, but you could any computer. There are Python is a good language to learn, your first language.
Yeah. I have Python on this one. Nice. I have Visual Studio.
Yeah, don't start doing Windows programming for me. Do me a favor.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not good. Here's why. You don't want to learn a specific skill at this stage in your career. And what will happen is you'll learn how to write software for Windows machines. That's too specific. You want to learn what you really want to learn. It's like if you were learning math and they started, instead of starting with 2 plus 2 and the fundamentals of algebra, a squared plus b squared equals c squared, if they started and said, let's build a bridge, and that's what you learned, that wouldn't be as good as learning the basics, right? So if you start with Windows, you're not learning the basics. I want you to learn what you're really going to hear. Get this. This is you want. Can I lay something heavy on you, Brennan? I'm going to lay something heavy on you, man.
I don't mind.
You don't mind? Can you dig this? You don't want to learn how to tell a computer what to do. That's not what you're going to learn. People think that's what programming is. What you want to learn is a language for expressing problems and their solution. And that's what programming, real programming, deep programming is. It's a language, a syntax for describing a problem and its solution. Does that make sense?
Yes.
If you learn it at that level, you'll be a much better programmer in the years to come. So it's nice. I started kind of the same as you get basic and then you write some spaghetti code and you can learn bad habits. It'd be nice to learn some good habits. There's a really, you really want to get deep. You could learn Lisp. What I'm saying is don't learn Java. Python's a pretty good start. Don't learn Windows programming. Get the command line, get Linux running, get Raspbian running, learn the command line, and learn how to write code in a fundamental language. I think Python's a very, very good start. In fact, I love it that you could tie it to Minecraft because you get some results. Hey, stay in touch, Brennan. This is the most fun thing you'll ever do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson is here. He's our home theater guru and a singer. Mm-hmm. A little bit more toward the madrigal side than the EDM side, but anyway.
That's right, yeah. Got that right.
He's the host of our Home Theater Geeks podcast at twit.tv/HTG for Home Theater Geeks. Also the editor-in-chief of the AVS Forum at avsforum.com. And joins us each week to talk about home theater. Still haven't pushed the button on my LG OLED. I'm waiting for that.
Uh-oh.
Waiting for that cheap one to come out.
Yeah, waiting for the B6.
The B6. I got a G6, but I don't want to. I can't afford a G6. I'm waiting for a B6.
Yep. I think the pricing just came out on those too.
Somebody bought one. Somebody in our audience bought one. He said, "Get it." They're egging me on. these OLED screens.
I think there's $2,000 difference between them. I think the G6 is $8,000. The E6 is $6,000, and the B6 is $4,000. So. It is a significant savings, and you're going to get the same picture quality, just a different design of the case and the bezel and stuff like that, which I don't care about. I could care less. I'm watching TV in the dark, so I don't even see it.
Right. I don't want a fancy bezel. I have a curved TV. I hate it. Hates it. So what's up in the world of home theater?
Well, there's bunches of stuff. Last week, I attended there's an organization called SMPTE. We talk about them sometime, the Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers. And they have different chapters in different parts of the country. And there's one in Hollywood, of course, probably the biggest chapter. And last week, they held a meeting about VR, virtual reality, and augmented reality, AR. And this is now an up-and-coming thing for cinematographers. And I've always wondered, how can you make a movie in VR? Because you really need to focus your attention on a story that the filmmaker's trying to tell. And yet, if you can look around and up and down and all around, how do you focus on the story? Well, it's such a brave new world. Nobody really knows the answer. One of the things that was said at this meeting was, go out and buy a VR camera. And they can be had pretty cheap, you know.
Yeah, I have a $350 Ricoh Theta S, which I recommend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They're down to maybe $200, yeah. $400, $600.
Yeah.
And they said, this guy, one of the presenters, said to this huge audience of cinematographers and engineers, he said, go buy one of these things and just experiment with it. That's the stage we're at right now.
Yeah.
Is we're just trying all kinds of different things, and you just have to and see what works and what doesn't, because we don't really know.
We don't know.
So it was very interesting.
There is an analog, and you and I have some benefit of being the old guys because we've seen it all, right? Maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, there was a move towards this kind of non-standard form of fiction where you write your own ending, you know, kind of based on adventure games.
Right, story branching.
Yeah, and it failed miserably because it turned out what people want is, the whole point of going to a movie or listening to a story or reading a book is you want the author to take you on a journey, we sometimes call it a story arc, and that's the point, is that you want to go on a journey. And so it's possible that this 360-degree immersive video, which I prefer to use over VR, this idea of it's happening all around you. Yep. Could be another one of those where, no, tell me what to look at. I mean, that's what a director does when they make a movie.
Now, on the other hand, another of the presenters said, look, humans naturally focus on...
Well, that's life, right?
...on something, which is life.
In life, nobody's telling us a story. It just happens.
Well, true. But he said that his research had indicated that... when you're telling a story in VR or 360 video...
Let's say immersive video because...
Immersive video. Okay, yeah. We'll say that. Then, you know, you naturally... Humans will naturally start to focus on the important thing that's going on.
Yeah.
So there was one company that did an immersive video of Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
In his studio. And you could look all around and see the drums over here and the keyboards over there.
I've seen it. I've seen that one. Yeah.
Oh, you have. Okay. We only saw it in.
Was it a studio or was it a concert? Because maybe I'm confused.
No, it was a studio.
Okay. So I've seen a Paul McCartney concert from the point of view of like sitting on his piano, and that's kind of you know what, for a concert, that's good.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Exactly.
Because now you're in the concert, especially, and this is a harder thing to do if the audio. Reflects where you're looking, you know. So you're
hard to do.
Yeah,
yeah. Then you need some sort of head tracking,
right?
So that the audio doesn't kind of shift around with you.
Yeah,
and that
they're working on that,
weird.
But it's a way. Yeah. It's difficult.
One interesting thing was they said if you shoot something live action with one of these spherical cameras, you only have that one perspective. But if you do it with CGI, computer generated imagery, you can have the person's perspective change as they move around,
right?
With head tracking. So I thought that was very interesting.
You know, there's a wonderful YouTube video. If you have it, by the way, it's easy to kind of find out what this is like by getting an inexpensive device like Google Cardboard. Many of you received one from in the New York Times was sending them out to subscribers. This one came in my Sunday Times. Google's giving them out. If you search for Google Cardboard, there's vendors. You can buy them for $10-$15. And then you have to have a smartphone with the software on. But you can put and it's Android or iOS, and you put the phone in. And there's a really good YouTube video that works with this. It's the Jungle Book. You get to be Mowgli. So Mowgli's the human character in King Louis's giant kind of
castle,
in the jungle. And the whole scene plays out, the song plays out, but you're Mowgli looking around. Of course, as you say, when they create these in CGI, these computer-generated worlds, it's by its very nature 3D. So it's a fairly simple thing for them to give you a immersive experience in there. That was cool. It's not a storytelling thing. It's experiential. It's about experience. Maybe that's the difference, is that we won't go there for stories. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Although this Paul McCartney thing was pretty cool because he was in his studio telling a story about how he wrote a song on a mandolin that he happened to find in some shop. And then he said he was going to – then I'm going to shoot a movie with Natalie Portman, who I'm friends with. So they told that story.
That's cool.
And it was very cool. Yeah, it was very cool.
I guess – I mean, you can still have a storyteller telling a story, but you're there with them. And that's what's – it's immersive in the sense that you're actually in the environment. You know, journalists have been playing with this. That's why the New York Times sent it out. And the challenge for that is, if you're the filmmaker, you're either in the movie, which journalists don't like to be, right? They don't want to be part of the story because that distorts it. Or worse, you have to say to the – this. They were doing a piece on children displaced by war. Mm-hmm. And you have to say, okay, kid, give me 30 seconds to get out of the room. And then you do whatever you would do naturally. And that's weird too. Right?
Yeah, it is.
So it's a challenge.
Is.
This is all new stuff. And yet for
it's
the
brand new.
End user, the experience is fascinating and exciting. And one thing we do know, it's great for gaming.
Well, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. We have a VR setup. We have another separate studio set up with a large space because the HTC Vive uses that. And we bring people in there. Anybody who comes by the studio, if they want, we set them up. And that just blows their mind.
Well, and you have to have a very powerful computer in order to do that well.
We built a $5,000 computer just for that. Scott Wilkinson, he's our home theater geek, and we love him. twit.tv/HTG if you want to watch his podcast, avsforum.com to read his articles. And, of course, he joins us here every week. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Mark is on the line. Well, he's using Skype, I guess, because he's calling from Sydney, Australia. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Leo. Absolutely using Skype, and hopefully I've got a nice and simple question for you as well.
All right.
Now, for many, many years, I was using the same password for every website I went to.
So was and I. I was using, believe it or not, monkey, the word monkey. The worst password. And in fact, when I look at password lists now, it's often in the top 10.
Sometimes, that's crazy.
Sometimes people want to make it harder, so they go monkey, 1, 2, 3.
I guess you could say that password was bananas, but anyway.
It was. But remember, this kind of all snuck up on us, you know, inch by inch.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But then I heard you talking about LastPass. So that's been my, like, favorite go-to password manager for many years. One of the things which I really love about it is I can access it via, like, multiple computers on a secure website.
That's what I like about it, too. Yeah, I think that's one of its best features, yeah.
Although, with work, I've just found the one password, and I've got a free license for it, which is really cool. Obviously, normally you need to pay for it, but I'm lucky with one of the places that I work for. But the interface for it is really, really awesome, especially like if you're using a Mac.
Yeah, this is a great – so these are the kind of the kings of password vaults. So let me talk about why you want to use a password vault, and then – there is one difference between 1Password and LastPass that might incline you know, user interface aside. I like LastPass isn't as pretty as 1Password, but it does do autofilling very well in a lot of environments like Android. 1Password came from the Apple side, the Mac side, and it doesn't quite do it as well on the Android. But I don't hold that against them. But let me talk about there is a significant kind of security difference between the two that I will talk about. So first of all, what is a password vault? The idea simply is, as you point out, having one password for all websites is a bad idea, especially as we start to see websites get breached. Your password might leak out. And then what does a bad guy do? Well, they say, hey, I got his password, and they try it on every site. And still, to this day, most people use one password because it's easier, one password at a time on for all sites. Don't do that. You should have a unique password and ideally a long, random password that's a mix of upper and lowercase letters, numbers, and punctuation. In other words, something totally unmemorable. Well, that, Leo, you... that's a terrible idea. How am I supposed to memorize? I have hundreds of passwords. What? So you keep them in a password vault. You let the password vault remember them. You can even let the password vault generate them, and it'll do a better job than you do. And then you only have to remember one password. That's the magic password that unlocks the vault. Now, it does create a very, very dangerous single point of failure. If somebody were to get into your vault, they'd get everything. But that's going to be true no matter what you do. If you have a notebook, if you use the same password on every site, whatever it is, you know, there's some vulnerabilities there. And it's better to use these nice, long, strong passwords and have a password vault that is secured properly. And in my opinion, both LastPass and 1Password do a good job of this. But you nailed it when you mentioned the fact that LastPass lets you log into their website and get your password. And the reason is LastPass stores your encrypted, your scrambled password vault on their servers. 1Password does not. And that is a significant difference. Now, admittedly, they're in both cases strongly encrypted. But remember, if a bad guy were to get all of these password vaults somehow or break into LastPass, download the password vaults and have kind of an infinite amount of time to bang on them, some of them would be broken into, and that's scary because every password's in there. If you didn't have a really good password on your password vault, if you had Monkey123 unlocking your password vault, that password vault were somehow stolen by a bad guy, you'd be in trouble because that's the first one of the first things he'd guess, and now all your passwords are available.
Yep.
So it's a theoretical vulnerability, but it is a vulnerability. And it makes it more convenient. But they store the password on their site. With 1Password, you're required to figure out how you want to get your password vault onto other devices. You can use Dropbox. That's probably even less secure than storing it on LastPass, but you don't have to. They have Wi-Fi sync. What I do with 1Password is I store my password vault on a local cloud storage solution that I own and use, and it's in my house. And so it's encrypted, and it's not. A bad guy would have to break into my house to get it. So that is, in my opinion, somewhat more secure. But a lot of people don't want to go through that, and I think that's a theoretical vulnerability and not a real vulnerability. I think LastPass is very well secured. Their servers are well secured. Joe Segrist, the guy who wrote LastPass, is a wizard and really did a good job in every respect. So I think you could use either one with impunity. But there is a significant technical difference between them that for a hardcore security person might say, I don't want that password vault stored anywhere that I don't control. So is that answer, you know, your question? That's a significant thing.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, certainly one of the things I like is having that flexibility. So if I go to a work computer, I can actually...
It's all there. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Versus what I'm finding with 1Password is I don't quite have that same level of flexibility.
Right.
Although, having said that, I can manually enter the password, so it might not be the end of the world, but it just adds a little bit of extra time to the process.
But these are exactly the right questions. And there is a trade-off between security and convenience. We know that. Easier to use often means less secure. This is a good example. It is much more convenient for LastPass to store your password vault. It's technically less secure.
Yeah.
Is that an issue? I don't think so, because I trust LastPass to secure their systems. But you are having to trust them a little bit more. With 1Password, you can keep that vault to yourself, secure it somewhere. Synchronize it via Wi-Fi, which is a good way to do it. So your phone gets within range of your home system. It will update the passwords. If you don't change passwords a lot or don't sign up for a lot of new sites, that's a good system. I think it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. Pick the one that you like the best, that works the best for you. I've used both of them on a regular basis. I've tried every one of them because I want to make sure that I'm up to date on which one. I won't say which one I use as my personal choice because I don't want to sway anybody. But I would say you'd be fine with either one of those.
But the one thing I'll say to everyone is, like, remember, don't use the same password for everything.
Right. Yeah.
And one thing.
That's a terrible thing to do. And both 1Password and LastPass have validation, you know, they have a security check that you can run, and that's one of the things they'll warn you about. And they'll warn you, they'll say, hey, you know, you're using this password on 3 other sites. Do you think you really should? And that's a great thing to at least make you think about that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Hey, I'm so glad you're listening in Sydney, one of my favorite towns in the world. I love it.
It was good when you were down here.
I had a good time.
As well.
Yeah. Time to go back, I think.
Exactly.
Thanks, Mark. Great to talk to you.
Cool. Thanks for
you. I appreciate it. This, you know, I hate to get too much into the weeds on these because any password vault is better than nothing, basically. What you're doing right now, if you're not using a password vault, is the most dangerous. Either writing it down, putting it on a post-it note on your computer, you are more likely using the same password over and over again. That's what most of us do. And that is not safe. That is really not safe. So that's why I don't care what password vault you use, any password vault is going to be a massive improvement in your security. We're going to get past this. This is a temporary. Passwords are a bad idea. Everybody agrees. Everybody's looking at ways to get around this. It's all about authentication, isn't it? It's all about proving you are who you say you are. And there are better and better ways to do this, including fingerprints and things like that. This will be just a bad memory soon. But for now, get a password vault. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Dale in Upland, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dale.
Hey, Leo. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, sir. What can I do for you?
Well, earlier you talked about the Windows 10 update and whether or not anyone had actually had it uploaded on their computer.
I've heard stories that people have been automatically updated. I haven't been able to confirm this myself. Were you automatically updated?
We were. My wife's laptop, it's an older Toshiba, and it came with Windows 7, and she liked Windows 7.
Yeah.
Fine. And she'd been getting, for the last couple of months, all those...
That annoying pop-up. Hey, it's ready for Windows 10. It's ready for Windows 10. Would you like to reserve a copy?
Exactly. It was driving crazy. So one morning last week, she got up and was going through, you know, her routine on the computer and realized it's downloading Windows 10. And she's like, I didn't ask for that. So, and we already had Windows 10 on a newer laptop that we bought, an Asus laptop, and she didn't really like it.
So, yeah, Microsoft changed the settings for the Windows update to automatically download Windows 10 on most computers. It's a recommended update. Doesn't mean it will install automatically.
Right. It always asks you usually. I mean,
right. It has to say, hey, I got it. Would you like it? I can install it right now.
And she has a Norton security on that computer, and it has auto, you know, backup all the time. So you had mentioned that they might have snuck it in under one of the backups.
Yeah, so, well, it's an update. But she didn't ever get asked, would you like to upgrade? It just upgraded?
Oh, it just started upgrading.
That's
sometime during the night last week. And I guess the question is there a way to download 7 again?
You don't have to. You don't have to. So here's the good news. Hit the Windows key and type recovery. And one of the recovery options, for 30 days after you upgrade to Windows 10, you can roll it back.
Excellent.
So do that. And it'll put it right back the way it was. And then go out and get that GWX control panel. GWX control panel and turn off those annoying pop-ups. And darn you, Microsoft, that is not okay. You know, the reason I'm very hesitant to say it happens automatically because I think sometimes people don't notice that they clicked okay or whatever. I'll take your word for it that it just happened.
My wife's a real detail person, so she's very specific about things.
It's just so wrong.
It is.
It's hard to believe that Microsoft would do that, but it sounds like they are doing that. That is just wrong.
You said you'd heard rumors, and unless there's something that was clicked unknowingly that didn't make it clear.
Yeah, I understand. Well, the good news is you can roll it back, but shocking. That's bad behavior. I like Windows 10, but it's bad behavior. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Let's go back to the phone calls, shall we? And I've got next Tim in Oregon City. Hi, Tim. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo. How are you today?
I'm very well. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great.
Good.
I do have a question.
Yes.
Regarding the iPhone.
Okay.
My wife has pictures on it, which we have a network attached storage unit in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of using the
iCloud. You don't want to use Apple's iCloud.
Because
it's expensive.
I'm an Android guy.
Well, it's expensive, too. I ended up buying 200 gigabytes of iCloud storage because you're using it not just for your photos, but for your backup, for your sync. There's a lot of reasons you use iCloud for documents. So it fills up fast. They only give you 5 gigabytes free. It's really That's really a taste, and they want you to pay for it. So... and it's not super expensive. I think I pay $2 or $3 a month for 200 gigabytes. So it's not horrifically expensive. It is the easiest because it's Apple, right? Apple products always work best with Apple software and Apple content. It's always the Apple ecosystem, and they design it that way. However, there are many other choices for backing up photos. Many of them are free. Google Photos would be the first one I'd look at. Google's Photos is an amazing solution.
I do have that for my Android.
Yeah, and it's available on iPhone, too. You just put photos on there from the App Store.
Right. But I've also got the MyCloud, the Western Digital MyCloud, 1 terabyte in the house.
Oh, I see. And you want, of course, you said that. You want to back it up to the MyCloud.
Right. So I've got it all set up on the Time Machine, all that fun stuff through the settings on the MyCloud. Now, her phone still says it's full when she copies or when it copies the pictures over to the MyCloud and her little segment that I've...
Yeah, she's just copying them. She's not deleting them.
Right. So I guess my real question would be to, is there a way or settings somewhere in the iPhone where you can go and delete all pictures at one time, or do you have to delete them individually?
Yeah, I think so. Let me just really quickly follow along on my iPad to make sure that what I'm saying is right. I believe you can go into it might be usage. Let me just try this. If you go to general and about, you can see how many photos you have and how much space they occupy on there. And let me just see if real quickly I can... no, I think I can't delete it from there. So the other place I... This is always drives me crazy with Apple. Is that... Well, they move all the settings out of the apps into their own settings. And then that makes so many settings in there that you have to dig around. Yeah, if you go to Photos and Camera... You can optimize iPad storage now, but that's an iCloud feature. Oh, man. You could delete all... You want to make sure it's backed up first, obviously.
Right.
And the nice thing about the MyCloud, not iCloud, but MyCloud, is they've added that feature a couple months ago. They put that in there so that it is automatically backing up. But unlike iCloud, see, again, Apple, it always works best if you go all Apple. What iCloud does is it keeps low-quality versions on your phone and keeps the full-quality versions in the cloud. So you don't lose your pictures. You have images suitable for the small screen. They're a lot smaller, so it saves space on your phone. And it makes sure that your phone never gets filled up. They call it optimized storage. Just looking in here about where we delete. Maybe if I turn off the iCloud photo library... No, that's... Yeah, if you turn off iCloud Photo Library, you can remove your photos. At least it's saying I can remove my photos. I'm going to have to dig around in here, but maybe the chat room can help me. How do I delete all the photos? Again, it's a risky process. Make sure you got them all backed up.
that's what we've been doing.
Okay, I would even suggest, this is just extra, get Google Photos. It's free. Are you an Amazon Prime member?
No, not all right. Currently.
If you're an Amazon Prime member, they have free unlimited storage on Amazon as well. Flickr will, if you, these are all apps you could put on there, and they don't conflict. You can have multiple copies. Flickr will upload all your pictures to Flickr up to a terabyte for free. I can go on and on. So all of these, cloud storage of photos has been solved, in other words. There's no issue. It's great if you want to keep them locally, but it's a little bit more complicated. Let me see here. The chat room has given me a link to a Macworld article. We'll put that in the show notes. How to bulk delete images from your iPhone. Oh, man. You have to... Oh, man. This is terrible. Yeah, this is not good. There is no way to do it on the iPhone directly, apparently. You have to plug it into your computer. And then launch image capture on the Mac. You have to have a Mac. Apple, you know what? I don't use iPhones anymore because Apple just really drives me nuts with this stuff.
Oh, you do have to use a Mac, though.
You have to use a Mac. You have to launch image capture. Then you can select all the images and delete them from your phone. There must be a better way. There's got to be a better way. That's my friend Chris Breen from last year. Maybe there's a better way in the new iOS 9. It used to be impossible. In the Photos app, go into an album, hit select, drag your finger over all the pictures. Okay, there you go. This is a non-intuitive. By the way, this is the other thing, a problem I have with Apple's Photos app, which is on the iPhone, is it's very hard to figure out how to use it. It's not obvious. So here's the trick. Go into albums on Photos.
Okay.
You have to do this album by album. Select all the images in an album by dragging your finger across them, and then there's the trash can. You can hit that. That's crazy. There's no mass delete.
Oh, man.
Remember, I mean, for a long time, you couldn't do that. You couldn't delete music either. It's just, this is, you know, all praise to Apple for creating this category in 2007. The iPhone was a groundbreaking device. Bravo, Apple, and I've owned every one since, and I've used them, and they're bravo, Apple. But times have changed. It's 9 years later. Could you please? I feel like they've got four guys working on this or something. This is the richest company in the world. Please assign a few more guys and update this software. The iOS software is antiquated, and the new Photos, which is their response to this, replaced iPhoto. Is so difficult and weird and causes so many problems. I know lots of people, I've abandoned it because it keeps corrupting my photos. So I feel like Apple is, and I'm not alone in this. This is a drumbeat that started in the last few months. Get it together on the software. You have let your software slide, and it is very bad. Very frustrating.
Yep.
So there's a few things. Good luck.
I got something to work on there.
Yeah. You can do it, but you have to do it manually in the Photos app. That's crazy. See, if you pay for iCloud, it'll do it. I don't think that's an accident. I will try to put more information about managing photos on an iPhone. Apple feels like they fixed this. You know, for a long time, until recently, I knew people who just fill up their phone with pictures, and there was no obvious way to get them off the phone. So Apple introduced iCloud Photos, the iCloud Photo Library, this automated management. But it only works if you buy storage from Apple. And, that's just, you know, for a lot of people, a non-starter. If you're going to, you know, my opinion, if you're going to use an iPhone, if you're going to use Apple products, you got to stay in the Apple ecosystem. It just all works better that way. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I've been everywhere, man. He's been everywhere, man. He's Johnny Jet. My gosh, man. That guy pays every fare, man. It goes from Alaska to California, everywhere around the world. He's been everywhere. Hi, Johnny Jet. I don't know.
Hello, Leo.
I ain't no Johnny Cash, that's for sure. But he is Johnny Jet, and every week he joins us with a travel tip. How to use technology to travel better. Website, apps. And it was so nice to see you. Johnny and his wife were up for the week. You stayed in beautiful Cavallo Point Inn in Sausalito, came to visit us. It was so nice to see you, Johnny.
Yes, it was nice to see you 2 days ago in the flesh. So now I'm in Connecticut, my home state.
This is a Memorial Day tradition for the Jet Clan.
You can always find me here, and I am here. And actually, I'm in my cousin's house where the Wi-Fi router is, so it's the strongest. So it looks like I'm in bed, but I'm really not.
He's sitting next to the Wi-Fi router. Well, you sound and look great. So what?
Okay, good.
Thank your cousin for the router. What are we going to talk about?
I will. So while I was actually on your set taping a new screensaver show I had one. I gave the list of all these different websites and apps that I love, and one of them was called Stay Connected.
Yeah.
And Megan's like, "Oh, is that the app that allows you to tune into any TV when it's muted? You know, in an airport waiting room or wherever?" I'm like, "No, I didn't know there was an app that existed."
What?
So actually, I then went home and did some research, and sure enough, there's an app called Tunity, T-U-N-I-T-Y.
Megan knows everything. Wow. Wow.
And so if you're in a bar, an airport waiting room, a lounge, and there's the TV's on and it's muted, you download this app. It's free on Android and iOS. You have to be in pretty close range to scan the TV. I'm not sure exactly how many.
You point the camera at the TV.
You point it. Open the app and it has a little screen, and you sync it up, and it supports over 100 channels. I did it at Cavalla Point, so I did the local news in San Francisco.
Because a lot of times they have, like at the gym, they have the sound turned off, and you
exactly.
put the captions on. You know?
Right, and you can't hear it. You want to hear it.
Yeah.
So this will allow you to hear it. Although, you know, I tried the local news in San Francisco. That did not work. Although then I changed the channel to CNN. Sure enough, that worked. That's
one of
the channels that's supported.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, but there are some local channels that are supported, just not too many in San Francisco yet, but they're expanding. But I love it because, you know, you could be in a sports bar. You could be traveling, eating alone, and just sitting at the bar. And, you know, you just want to watch what's on the tube, but they don't have the sound on. And you can listen to it. Put your earbuds in though.
How's the synchronization? Is it pretty close?
It's actually really good, and there's actually some buttons to fine tune it.
Yeah.
So just in case it's off a little bit, like an old Godzilla movie or something, you can tune it.
That's Tunity, iOS or Android. They have both. I'm downloading this right away, especially for travelers. I'm often in the airport where they have a screen on. And you can't hear it, or it's on, but it's only if you sit under it that you can hear it. And I want to watch the news. I got nothing else to do.
For sure. Yeah. And on the flip side, by the way, I have a buddy who carries around a little clicker that
turns it off. That's
any
mean.
TV.
That's mean.
And he does it if he's in the lounge and it's really loud, the TV, and there's no one else there, which I kind of like. I was going to get one. It's called TV Be Gone.
Yeah. I remember when that came out. Yeah. That's mean. You're mean.
Yeah. All right. So now I got a website for you.
Yeah.
So this one is – everyone's always emailing me saying, hey, what's the best airline for long-haul flights in coach? And so, you know, most of the travel bloggers these days, they're flying business class because
right.
they earn so many freaking
right.
flyer miles. Airline is –
they don't know how the people have to travel.
Exactly. And, you know, and I'm sometimes guilty of that myself.
Well,
although
you get upgrades. I've seen you get upgraded.
Oh, yeah. I flew coach yesterday from San Francisco to here. But anyway, so you go to SeatGuru. Actually, go into Google and type in SeatGuru long haul economy class comparison chart.
Oh.
Actually, all you have to do is type in SeatGuru long haul economy class and it will show up. And anyway, what I really like about this chart is that it's only for economy class and it will show you you know, everything you need to know, what the seat pitch is, how wide it is, if it has power, which is especially important when you're traveling on these, you know, super long haul flights. You know, you expect the airline to have power ports. Some of them don't. So then you need to do you need to go either get a backup battery or bring a power port your own.
This is great. And you can sort it. So depending on what's most important to you.
Yep.
Like the widest seats are in Asiana Airlines. Who knew that? You know, what kind of video? Like United on its Boeing 777 to Hawaii, no video. No laptop power. Wi-Fi, though. And a good seat pitch. So you just never know. Wow.
So it's important. I mean, because not all airlines or aircrafts are created equal. And I think I talk about this often. So, you know, if you fly a major airline like American, you look at their aircrafts between major cities. So I fly LA, Miami often. So a lot of times they're flying either like crappy 737s or 57s, you know, but once in a while they fly the 777-300, which is, you know, the granddaddy of American. And not only is it much better in business and first, but coach is so much better as well.
Good to know. This is so very useful stuff.
I really like that.
Yeah. You want to do a tip? We got some time.
All right. So, you know, everyone's traveling this year. They're heading out to Europe. It's, you know, the prices have been so cheap. So keep in mind that there's a lot of scams out there. And I've been taken before. So I learned the hard way. Before you go on these trips, do some research. Whatever country you're going to, you know, Google that country and the State Department advice. Also look on similar pages like Australia's State Department, Canada's, and United Kingdom's, and read their pages because they'll tell you about all the scams that are going on. One time my buddies and I, we were in Budapest. We met some cute girls and they're like, hey, you want to go get a drink? And my buddy's like, yeah, let's go to a bar. So they're like, let's go to this bar right here. We're like, okay. So we go into this bar. They order a round of, you know, just one round of drinks. And all of a sudden the bill came and it was 10 times what it should have been.
Yeah.
And they were shocked like we were. And they're like, they gave us $50. It was $350.
So bad. Oh.
Yeah. And my buddy's like, we just got scammed. I'm like, no, we didn't. Those girls were so sweet. We went back the next day, staked out the place. Sure enough, those girls walked back in with two other guys. And we're like, don't go in there. But, of course, the State Department – I then looked at the State Department's page, and it said, beware of these bars, these scams.
No kidding.
And there's all kinds of scams, not just this scam.
That's why it's helpful to look like I do, because if a cute girl ever says, let's go have a drink, I know it's a scam right away. It's like, oh,
This is when I was single, you know.
You're a good-looking guy. You fell for it. I understand. Wow, that's an interesting scam.
Yeah.
I have to remind my son about this kind of stuff. He's been scammed many times now.
But there are so many. And I was in Europe, you know, recently, and I was with a bunch of travel writers, and one lady, she knew about all these different pickpockets and stuff. Sure enough, she came back. She goes, my wallet is gone. She was in a church, and it took one person just to bump into her, and it's gone. You got to really protect that.
I got to say, travel, don't be scared about this. I mean, these guys, you know, they're not going to knife you, but you just should know, you know, how to store your money and be careful about that, because there are some – it's just like the internet.
Some places they will knife you, but not in Europe so much, but South America.
Oh, no. You know I was walking through Buenos Aires in like midnight with my very expensive camera hanging off my thing, and a guy comes up and taps me, and I'm like scared. He says, dude, put away the camera. you're asking for trouble.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I felt safe. I didn't really feel scared, so –
And if you go to Brazil for the Olympics, if it even happens, you know, especially Brazil, I never wear any rings, anything flashy.
And leave all your mosquito netting the whole time. You'll
that's what you need.
You'll be safer. Johnny Jett, you'll find his website, johnnyjett.com. And boy, there's lots of great stuff there, including free travel newsletters that can get you amazing deals. He's always looking for those best deals on tickets. The airlines must hate you. Man,
the passengers
love
me. Passengers love me.
And follow him on Twitter. He's got some great Twitter lists at Johnny Jett, or on Instagram if you want to see the pictures. If you don't mind a little jealousy, because man, this guy goes some great places. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you, Leo.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More to come right after this. I did get scammed in. You're right, Jono. I got scammed in New Orleans. But
for
I can't. You know, Lisa knew. I kind of knew. The guy comes up. He says, I can tell you where you got them shoes. I said, no, you can't. He said, I will. If you give me $5, will you give me $5 if I tell you where you got them shoes?
That's an old one.
That's really an old one. I had never heard it before. I was a babe in the woods. But, you know, it was worth it. And he polished them afterwards, so it was okay.
That's all right. That's I don't consider that a scam. That's more of a...
He says, you got them on your feet. And I went, He says, that'd be $20. But then he cleans
them. Was it $20?
$20. He said $5 at first. It increased. Anyway.
I wouldn't do the $20.
You know what? I gave him $20 because it was like, that's it. You know, it's so what? It's cute. He's funny. He made it fun. He made it fun to be scammed. Shirley on the line from North Hollywood. Hi, Shirley.
Hi, Leo.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. Say, I don't know how to use a computer, and I've never had one. I've never been on one.
Are you interested in joining the 21st century?
Yes. I have to. I'm forced to now.
Uh-oh. You got a new job, or?
No, I'm retired, actually.
Okay.
But, I cannot, you know, if I want any general information, forget it. When I call information, they don't even recognize my voice. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, 411, what's that?
Yeah, really. So I'm just out of the loop here, and I've got to, I just
have
to.
Isn't that funny? That is kind of what, that does kind of happen, doesn't it? Where
yes.
I mean, people still get, I think you still get a phone book and a Yellow Pages delivered to your doorstep
forget
once a year.
It. They're all disconnected. They've all been out of business.
Yeah.
It's just horrible. So, anyway,
so here's what I would suggest. You don't have to spend a lot of money.
Okay, good.
I would get something called a Chromebook.
Chromebook.
They're between $200 and $500, not more.
Okay, and what brand do you recommend?
I was going to say go on Amazon, but you can't, can you?
You're right.
Now, the other thing you're going to need for any computer is you're going to need the internet connection. And don't leave that out of the equation,
okay.
Right?
Because
it's no good without, you know, a computer without an internet connection, just a fancy calculator.
Right. Now, all I have right now is a landline, and I'm with AT&T. And then I do have DirecTV. So I don't know, just can I don't even know how to get the internet.
Now, one thing you can do with some Chromebooks come with, like, they're like a cell phone. They come with a cell phone data connection. You pay for that, but you'll pay for internet no matter what.
Okay, right.
But you can get it. It's around $20 a month for the internet access. The Chromebook's not super expensive. So you want a Chromebook that will ideally support LTE. Let me look where you're calling from. Oh yeah, you're in the city. You have close enough to you'll have no problems getting high speed internet.
Okay, I want high speed internet.
No, you'll get it if you have LTE. You want a Chromebook with something called LTE built in.
Okay, I wrote that down. I don't know what a Chromebook is.
So a Chromebook is a kind of laptop.
Okay.
And it's not Windows. It's not Macintosh. It's much simpler. And for your first computer, that's what you want. It's also totally secure. And that's even more important. Because what happens when you get your first computer is often you'll get infected with malware, what we call malware, with viruses, and then you're in a mess. You're in a mess. So what the Chromebook's good for is surfing the internet. That's something you want to do, right? That's how you look up phone numbers. That's how you buy stuff on Amazon.
You know what? I don't mean to interrupt you, but I don't want any of the bells and whistles. I'm just looking to bring up information. I'm not going to be
paying bills.
That's it.
This is what the Chromebook's for. Exactly.
Okay, but, you know, I was in the market the other day, and I had a question for the girl for measurements and how many cups are in a pint.
Yeah.
She just talked into her phone, pushed
yes.
the phone, asked her phone, and it told her back.
Yes.
I thought, gee, that's something perfect for me.
Well, you know what? A smartphone might be the other way to go.
Okay,
I mean, for many of us now, the smartphone is our computer.
Right.
And so do you have a cell phone now?
Yeah, but it's only a track phone. It's like pay as you go.
Okay.
It's just for emergency purposes only I use it. But.
So now we're talking more money because not only do you have to buy the phone and they cost hundreds of dollars.
Okay.
You got to pay a monthly fee to the cell company.
Yeah. So what am I looking at with that smartphone?
Well,
is it a monthly basis?
Yeah. The smartphone will cost you around the least expensive decent smartphone will be about $400.
Okay.
And then you'll be paying a minimum of $50 a month.
Wow. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Okay. That is getting.
I know.
So the Chromebook.
Chromebook is cheaper. Now, you're not carrying it in your pocket. You're not carrying it in your pocket, but it is a laptop you could carry around.
Okay, right.
And if you get one with LTE, you still get that ability to ask that question, by the way. You could still talk to the Chromebook. Okay.
Right. Yeah, I'm just going to be for general information. I don't want all this, put your pictures in it and all that. I just don't, at this point, I just want to be able to bring up general information that I need. And that's just, and can I get that at like Best Buy or something?
You can.
Okay.
When you go there, the other thing you might want to look at is tablets.
Okay.
Now, the problem with tablets is it's very tempting to get a cheap $100 tablet based on Android that is not very good.
All right.
So if you're going to get a tablet, you're going to spend more money. And I would recommend getting an iPad and getting one with LTE. And again, you're going to have the you have to pay a monthly fee for internet one way or the other.
Okay, that's okay. But the what's the difference between the Chromebook and then what you're talking
about? So the Chromebook has a keyboard. It's more like a laptop computer with a real keyboard.
Right. Okay.
A tablet is like a big smartphone. It's all touch. It's all screen.
Okay, so which one do you think would be better for me, with the keyboard or the touch?
I'm actually thinking you might the tablet might be the right thing for you.
The tablet?
Yeah.
Wait, okay, now, is that the Chromebook?
No, the Chromebook's a laptop.
Tablet.
A tablet,
okay,
I would, so you can go to Best, no, please, don't apologize at all. This is great. I'm very glad to help you with this.
Okay, thanks.
You go to Best Buy, you can say, here's what I want to look at. I want to look at Chromebooks with LTE. Remember that LTE?
LTE.
That means that's the internet connection. I need say I don't have internet at home, so I need LTE. And I want to look at a tablet with LTE. You don't have to get an iPad. I just don't want you to get the really cheap Android tablet. Maybe look at a Samsung Tab. And actually, you can go to a cell carrier and get a deal on the Samsung Tab, too. You could go to
a Samsung
TAB.
Samsung TAB.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Both of those will do that thing where you go, hey, both of those do that thing where you go, okay, how many cups in a pint?
Right.
And it'll answer you out loud, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Both of them will do that.
I don't know, it just seemed really.
You maybe go to a T-Mobile, one other place you could go instead of a Circuit City or a Best Buy is a T-Mobile store. Because they sell tablets and connectivity together.
Okay.
And then at least you'll get a good idea of the total price.
All right.
And T-Mobile sells Samsung tablets, and they bundle them together with the connectivities to give you a better deal.
Yeah, but they're not going to try to oversell me stuff, are they?
Well, everybody's going to try to oversell.
You know, because I'm so illiterate on all that.
I know. Surely everybody's going to try to oversell you. So,
yeah,
just be skeptical. Go slow.
Yes.
And make sure you don't get... What you don't want to get is out-of-date technology. Say, is this, when did this come out? You know, did it come out this year?
Right. So something 2016 or...
Yeah, make sure that they don't sell you the 2013 tablet.
Right. because they could very easily do that.
Yeah, but because they're going to get you...
They're
going to get you on a monthly fee at T-Mobile or AT&T or Verizon or any of these. They should give you a deal on the tablet.
All right.
And so that might be a good way to go. I would say T-Mobile.
T-Mobile.
Yeah.
I've got that.
So find the nearby T-Mobile store. Go in there. Maybe even say, I'm not going to buy it today, but I just like to know what my options are.
Right.
And get the full cost.
Okay.
So, for instance, they may have for $25 a month a tablet with unlimited data. And that would be a pretty good deal for you. And it would do all the things you want. And that'll give you some idea of, I think that's a really good way to start. Without worrying about security, without, you wouldn't have to take a class. You'd probably want to, you know, go, I don't know what's going on. You have a grandkid lying around somewhere that could help you?
No, I sure don't. You know,
find a kid.
How am I going to navigate this thing? Because that's why I thought with just talking to it, you know, would be from because of the keyboard and all.
Well,
of that.
The tablets don't have a physical keyboard, but they have a keyboard that will pop up that you can use if you need one.
But you're
right. Mostly you talk to it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, yeah, the navigation part, I don't.
Yeah.
I know I can take a class and all that, but I want to kind of just get on it.
I bet you'd be able to figure it out. The nice thing about touch is it's very natural.
As you go,
yeah.
As you go. Yeah. So I think once I start using it, I'll pick it up. Yeah.
Go to the T-Mobile store or go to the Apple store, and you can ask them there, too. Apple's a little more expensive, but they'll give you a lot more help. They'll sit down with you and show you how to use it.
Okay.
And Apple will not oversell you on anything. They're pretty good about that.
Okay.
And call me back, Shirley, and let me know how it goes. You're entering the 21st century. And by the way, I don't think everybody needs to, but you raised a good point. There's things you can't do anymore with that. Joe in Corona is next. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I've been better, but I've been worse, so I guess I'm all right.
I'm feeling pretty good myself.
Good.
And fine fettle.
I want to say that your show today is just outstanding.
Thank you.
You have touched on so many subjects that are dear to my heart. Electric vehicles, raised floors,
You must be an engineer.
Well, yeah, I retired from Boeing. So
somehow I knew that. Awesome. Nice to meet you.
I used to build satellite junk.
How fun.
We called it that because we'd shoot it into orbit and it would become junk.
That's another great subject. I love talking about space as well. We live in amazing times.
We do.
It's so easy to take it for granted.
I can likely say that I have items in orbit that have my initials in them somewhere.
How fun is that?
I think it's fun.
That's awesome.
Anyway, I heard something about virus protection on Windows 10 being adequate the way it's set up rather than having an external McAfee.
Yes.
Something like
so
that.
What I really don't like, we get a lot of calls from people who either get free trials of McAfee or Norton, or they decide, oh, I've heard over and over again, I have to have an antivirus, and they put them on. And what I really don't like about a lot of the security software is it actually adds a security flaw. For instance, Symantec, Norton's antivirus, we learned, actually made systems less secure, had a severe flaw in it. It at best, it will slow you down, block stuff you don't need. And fortunately, Microsoft, I think they took their time on this. They didn't want to put these antivirus companies out of business. But they knew, ultimately, it's their responsibility to protect their users. So it slowly worked its way up to this point. At first, they offered a free antivirus called Security Essentials. Then they kind of bundled anti-spyware into Windows 8 called Defender. Now, at this point in Windows 10, it comes with an antivirus. It comes with anti-spyware. And the other thing that's which is fine, it's lightweight, doesn't bog you down, doesn't get in your way. It's from Microsoft, and it's free. It's there. You already have it. You don't even have to do anything about it. The other advantage, the other thing that's changed is viruses don't work the same way they used to. Because Microsoft has done a good job patching Windows, protecting you, viruses no longer work. You know, remember they used to, you'd get one on a floppy disk or you'd inadvertently download one and it would take over your machine. They don't do that anymore. They change them fast. Antivirus companies can't keep up with the signatures. Really, what you protect yourself now, no antivirus can do what you can do to protect yourself. So I tell people, you don't need an antivirus, but you do need to make sure you update regularly, and not just Windows, but anything that goes on the internet, Flash, your browser, all of that stuff. And most of these companies now are updating automatically regularly to prevent these problems.
Now, this virus protection that's built in, is it good for any of the browsers, Edge?
Yeah, it protects you universally. But again, nothing protects you. Nothing protects you against your own mistakes.
Oh, yeah. Don't click the wrong thing.
So, because if it did, and this is why antivirus problems also pose problems, is if it stops you from doing stuff you want to do because it thinks you're doing something dangerous, that's annoying.
Yeah, very.
and a lot of times they do.
I've used Kaspersky for years, and they upgraded from pure to total security.
That's where they usually go wrong. Kaspersky, in its simplest form, just scans your disks, and that's pretty harmless.
Yeah, and I liked it before that, but when they went to the new stuff, they kind of made it bigger.
Yeah, everybody does this. That's what happened to Norton. That's what happened to McAfee. Don't get those big security suites. Those are dangerous.
Yeah, bloatware.
Bloatware. So you're fine. You just have to make sure you understand the critical rules of protecting yourself online. And number one is update.
Right.
You got to keep everything up to date because this software has flaws in it and you got to keep it up to date. Microsoft's done such a good job now. Number two, by the way, do not, and I've said this for years, open email attachments. Do not. There's recently, Microsoft just patched, Apple just patched a flaw where a malformed image, a TIFF or a bitmap image, sent to a Macintosh machine or iOS could give a bad guy complete access and control of your system.
A
It's insane.
And you would say, mostly people would say, oh, well, it's just an image. What harm could it do? But it wasn't the image that was causing the problem. It was in the image when it got played back by the media subsystem on the computer that had a flaw in it. The malware in the image would trigger this flaw. And so this always happens because of attachments. Don't open attachments. And people say, well, if it's from somebody I know, is it safe? No, that's worse, because the bad guy's going to pretend to be somebody you know.
I had that happen.
So don't only open attachments if you expect them, you asked for it. It's, you know, be very careful with attachments. That's, by the way, the number one way businesses now get bit by ransomware is right. by an email attached. That's how Sony got bit. I guarantee you, once they dig into the Democratic National Committee hack, it will have been an email. It will have been an email attachment.
Yep, no doubt.
So you know this. You're an engineer. You know.
Well, I'm slowly going out of date. My real expertise in computers was in DOS.
Ah, well, you know, there's a lot to be said for simplicity.
Oh, God, yes. I love it.
They just recently released the source code for the Apollo 11 lunar module landing computer. I don't know if you saw this. It was assembly. And, of course, as you know, as a satellite designer, the software and chips that have to go into space have a whole – first of all, the chips have to be simpler. They have to be protected against cosmic rays.
Sure. And upset.
And the software can't have a bug.
Because
if
you can't send somebody out to fix it, I volunteer.
That's right. I'll go up. I can fix it.
It's a one-way trip, you know?
Yeah. So simple is celebrated, and it ought to be celebrated in space. We're still sending spacecraft up with fairly old chips in them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because
we were launching some stuff maybe 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
And the maximum memory in our spacecraft control units was, you know, under a meg.
Right. Not a liability necessarily, because you're tightly coding. You the chip does what you need it to do. You don't send an Intel i7 processor into space. That would be nuts.
You know, and that brings me to a whole. I mean, this is a whole point I've had for years, was the issue with bloatware. And if we had run into the quantum limit, which we sort of did. When the Pentium started...
I remember they couldn't make a 4 gigahertz Itanium. It flopped, yeah.
Exactly. If we had run into the memory limit and the processor speed limit earlier, we would be writing so much better code.
I agree.
I mean, we would have... I mean, if your maximum hard drive was still 20 megabytes, we'd be doing everything we're doing now. We'd just be doing it with much better code.
There's a lot that can be done to make our software safer. Certainly, if you're running a computer, you should be very aware of overly complex stuff. I'm kind of a fan of, and increasingly a fan of, the Unix philosophy, which is
absolutely.
Each program does one thing.
Does it very well, and then it moves on.
And you can chain programs together if you want more complex things. You can, in effect, build your own more complex engine. But just do one thing well. It's easier to debug. It's easier to verify. It's easier to maintain.
It used to be that was the philosophy of programming.
That's right.
In basic programming, it's if-then. Do one thing, do it, move on to the next thing.
It would almost be nice to reboot and refactor, but, of course, we're not going to be able to do
That's
that.
That's
yeah. Hey, it was great talking to you.
Great talking to you, and thank you for your help on this. It's what I needed to hear.
Thank you, Joe. Have a great day. Stay safe on the internet. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's time to say hey to Dickie D. Dick D. Bartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. He is our Gizwiz. Hello, Gizwiz.
Leo, how you doing?
I'm great. How's things in New York City?
Things are good, and I have bad news for you, Leo.
Oh, no. Yes?
All the money you're spending on all those ships you're going on.
Yes.
You could get the same effect
yes.
in your own home for under $20.
Magic fingers in the bed. How?
No. I am talking about the Ocean Wave Projector.
Oh. So make yourself sick at home, huh?
Yes, you can. So it's some LEDs.
Yeah.
It's like a bowl-shaped device
yeah.
that faces your ceiling.
Okay.
And you dial the color you want.
Is this the Ohuhu?
Yes. Yes, it, well, you know what? It wasn't. I bought a more expensive model, but yeah. Now the Ohuhu is even cheaper. I believe it's down around $17.
Wow. There are a whole bunch of these, apparently.
Yes. But the Ohuhu looks exactly like mine.
It's got the best name, too.
The best name, too. Exactly. So you can either pick out a blue ocean with waves, or a red ocean, or a green ocean. The green, I like the green best. It looks like I'm laying at the bottom of a swimming pool.
Well, that's kind of, I mean, you feel like you're under the ocean, right? Because it's projecting that, on your ceiling.
On your ceiling. It's like you're under the ocean.
So if you were on a cruise ship and you saw that, you would actually think, oh, my God, we have sunk.
Yeah, well, no. You could buy an inside cabin. And then
put it on the roof.
And then say to you, look at, this is, we say $5,000 and it's the same effect.
Wow. Yeah, the last thing you see is the Ohuhu. I like the name, Ohuhu. The Ohuhu. Is it the Ohuhu or just the Hoo-Hoo? Because
I think it's the Ohuhu.
It looks like the O could be just a leaf graphic.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's O. In the typed out name, it's Ohuhu. But you're right. It does look like
Yeah, it could be the Hoo-Hoo.
Yeah.
And whoever typed this just didn't know.
Exactly. And if you want to do even more.
Yes.
It comes with a little audio cable and there's a built-in speaker in the base of this device.
Does it sing like the ocean?
No. I mean, what do you want for $17?
What does it do?
Basically, what you can do is plug your phone, the headphone jack, into this with the little cable that comes with it, and then play music through your Ohuhu.
Ohuhu.
That will. So you could, you know, get sound effects of ocean. Yeah, there you go.
I'm playing whales.
There you go.
Have you heard? Okay, you wake up in the middle of the night. You forgot you bought the Ohuhu. You hear this. And you look up, and it looks like you're underwater.
Yeah.
Bad
and
dreams.
You say, honey, can you turn over? Because you're snoring.
You sound like a whale.
Right. But wait, there's one more thing.
But wait, there's more. Yes.
It shuts off automatically after 1 hour.
Yeah,
the blue.
You like the blue. It really does. It waves like you're.
It waves. There's a little plate with improper indentations of all different sizes. And there's a little arm that slides it back and forth over the LEDs.
So it's just like you're underwater.
It's just like you're underwater.
O-M-G.
Underwater, you're drowning for just $17.
Do people do this to because it makes you sleep?
You know what? I think it's very comforting.
I don't understand why being under the water in a swimming pool would be comforting.
Well, it's because it's like
pleasant.
You're at the beach.
Yeah, it's just pleasant.
Exactly.
And then what is it come with? What music does it come with?
It has no music, so don't forget. It comes with the speaker's built into the base.
You would just play your own music through it.
Yes, right. Through a cable that also comes with it.
God.
Now it has three-way power. There's so many features.
This is so good.
It can run on four AA batteries.
Okay. For portability.
It can run from USB. And they also put an AC to USB plug in there.
So you can just plug it in your laptop.
Plug it into the water. Yes, you can run it from your laptop.
So this is very portable. I guess there's a helicopter in with the whales now. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. Wait a minute. Is that the soundtrack from Poseidon?
Poseidon Adventure?
Like ship just turned over.
You know, there's a lot of whale song available on YouTube, if you wanted to just, and now we have the ocean.
Yeah.
I guess whales sound like
good.
Helicopters. Yeah.
I do know whale, and the whale is saying $17. That's very reasonable.
What a deal, Dickie D.
Isn't it moored?
Yeah. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to tell you how to find out more about this. Dick has an event coming up. So stay here, Leo Laporte. The tech guy and Dick DiBartolo, the gadget guy, we're having a whale of a good time. Dick DiBartolo is here, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. He's brought his whale song and his whale light projector.
Just for this spot, I am Moby Dick.
Call me Ishmael DiBartolo. The details on this are at his website, gizwiz.biz. We got a brand new What the Heck Is It contest. Well, not quite brand new. It's about halfway through right now. Yes. Another month to go till October 31st to identify the gadget of the what is it? The 2 months. What is the
The gadget of the 2 month deal.
The gadget of the 2 month
deal. It doesn't roll off the tongue.
It's not exactly catchy.
The bi-monthly game.
The bi-monthly game of the bi-month. And if you go to GizWiz, that's his website, GizWiz.biz, you can do that. You can also see, if you click the GizWiz Visits a Tech Guy, you can find the Ooh-hoo-hoo, which is probably the best named product you've brought. And you bring wild product names, but Ooh-hoo is a, is a great name. Bring on the callers. Have you? I think we have a few. I see the board blinking. Usually that means there's something going on.
Yeah. Oh, very much so.
Something magical happening. Who should I talk to?
Adam in West Covina has a question about the new MacBook Pro.
Well, I happen to have one sitting right in front of me, so let me answer your question. Hello, Adam in West Covina. How are you today?
I'm well. How you doing?
I'm good. I got the 13 and the 15 on Wednesday, and I've been playing with them ever since.
Oh, okay. Cool. Couple quick questions. I'm looking to get one, but I've been hearing you say that they're not like pro-ish.
Well, that was not me saying it so much as other people looking at the specs. It's hard to tell when you look at the specs whether a laptop is pro-ish. I think the whatever pro-ish means. I think the issue really comes down to Apple's the only company that makes Macintosh computers. They're the only company that makes Apple laptops is Apple. So, and Apple doesn't make a whole bunch of different kinds. So you kind of are stuck with what they make. One of the things Apple did this time around is max out at 16 gigabytes of RAM. There's some people who would like more, and there's certainly plenty of laptops running Windows and Linux that can run 32, 64, 128 gigs of RAM. So it's an artificial decision by Apple. So in that respect, some people say, well, you know, to do what I do, I need more memory. Apple also has made it so that you can't upgrade these in any way. Everything, including the memory, is soldered down onto the motherboard. So what you buy is what you get. And that's different from years gone by as well. But whether it's right for you is another question. I mean, there are plenty of pros who can I put pros in quotes, who can live with 16 gigs. What are you looking for?
Because here's the thing. I run Logic Pro.
Oh.
Yeah. And I don't want to have any problems because I do run a lot of plugins.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I have Logic Pro on my system, but I'm not a musician, so... I can load all of the, you know, sounds. I can load all the, you know, I could put everything in here, and try to play a big thing. It all seems to play. But I can't guarantee what you're doing will work. Right?
That's I process vocals and instruments. So when you're running compressors, it starts to bog down.
Yeah, of course.
I have an iMac. It's a pretty recent iMac, and it shows some bogging down.
Yeah.
The more plugins I start running, so.
Yeah, that's frustrating.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, this is it. There are some examples, and one of them is music. Programs, DAWs, digital audio workstations that have many, many tracks or are doing a lot of work behind the scenes. And the thing with music is it's real time. You can't – bogging down is not a good thing. You need it to play at full speed. So would this laptop be adequate is a good question. I mean, certainly you can buy an iMac with more RAM and more power.
Yeah.
There are other things that the Apple has perhaps underpowered this machine with the graphics cards and so forth are not the best out there. There are better if you're a gamer and so forth. So, yeah, I guess that's the real answer is it's a pro machine name, but that's a marketing name. Is it enough to do what you want to do? That's another question, and you have to just ask on a case-by-case basis. If your iMac's bogging down, how much RAM does your iMac have?
I have 32.
Yeah, and it's bogging down. And memory is a big part of it. The CPU on these top-of-the-line MacBook Pros is a i7, you know, the Skylake, not the latest, not Kaby Lake, the Skylake, 2.9 gigahertz. Pretty fast. That's probably fast enough, I would guess, to handle all the threads. But lack of RAM could be a big issue.
You
could send me their tracks and I'll try it. Get somebody to try it. But it sounds to me like it isn't pro enough for what you want to do if an iMac can't handle it.
Yeah, because I run the Wave Mercury bundle.
Yeah. Those plugins will bog you down too, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, and you know, a lot of different compressors, different type of compressors, EQs, so forth.
So what's sad is Apple's kind of seems to have turned its back on a certain class of user. It's a small number, but it's a passionate number. It's people who have been big supporters of the Macintosh, people like you. Look, every music studio in the world, you go in, there's a Macintosh in there. But that's starting to change. Same thing with video editors, special effects editors. That's starting to change because you can get – there are many manufacturers of PCs, and the competition means you can get a broader range of hardware, including lots more RAM, at a lower price than Apple's charging. Apple raised the prices on these. So I understand the dissatisfaction. People want to – I want to use OS X. I like OS X, or Mac OS as we call it now. I like it. And Logic is an Apple product, so you can't run it on anything else. So if you're tied to Logic, you're kind of stuck.
That's the thing. Yeah, and I don't want to take the time to learn, like, you know, Cubase or
– right.
Or, you know, Pro Tools.
I wonder what the music industry is doing at this point. Well, you know, I guess really the issue is more like DJs and people want to take it on the road. You can use a desktop in a studio, right? But it's if you're going to take the thing on the road, you want a laptop. It's a little frustrating, but it's Apple's, you know, this is Apple's business. And the only reason it matters is because if this were Acer or Asus or Dell, people would just say, well, fine, and go to another company. But it's the only company that makes Mac OS computers. And a Hackintosh, while it's a possibility, I mean, it's, you know, technically not legal, but it's a possibility, isn't a good solution for a pro because you want, you know, reliability is important too. So your other choice is Windows and learning a new program. It's a little different for photographers and video editors and so forth because you know, Adobe is available on both platforms. It runs identically on both platforms. So you can choose Windows or Mac OS. I like these new laptops. I'm relieved that the keyboards are better. They are pointing out to me that with Thunderbolt 3 on these new laptops, you could get a Thunderbolt 3 audio interface, you know, hardware that would plug in and offload the Mac. And, of course, that's going to help. But you know, I don't know. I mean, it's a really interesting question. I just don't know. I think it's now at this point, it's an individual question. You have to go and try it and see. It sounds like this will, if the iMac can't keep up, this will not. This is not any faster than the best iMacs out there. Newer newer processors, the iMacs are Haswell still, Skylake processors, but that doesn't make a big difference in performance. Well, I don't know if that helps or not, Adam. This is a little depressing to me because I like Mac OS. I really do. I think a lot of people are looking at Windows and even at Linux as an alternative. More hardware, less money. If you can find the software you need, then that's the way to go. Bernie in San Dimas, California is next. Hi, Bernie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good afternoon, Leo.
Good afternoon.
Long time caller.
It's good to talk to you. Welcome.
I've got a simple problem. I've got an old PC that I'm resurrecting temporarily, and I've put XP on it. I've got all the service packs loaded, and it's working perfectly. But I want to know, how do I get all the various updates that Microsoft put on my other PC over time to go on to this PC?
Well, you can get the service pack. I think you can get the service pack 2 on XP. The problem is XP.
I've got all the service packs are installed.
Oh, okay.
I want all those updates to the service packs that came afterwards.
Well, you can get right up to April of 2015. Okay. But then after April 2015, Microsoft said, hey, that's it. By the way, We're done with Windows XP. No more patches. And so one of the reasons we've started saying stop using XP is because of the threat. Not so much the reality, but the threat that there'll be a bad, bad flaw in XP discovered. People will take advantage of it, and Microsoft will just go, never mind. Can't do anything about it because it's out of end of life. So you're always at risk with Windows XP of that. Now, interestingly, that hasn't happened. It's been more than a year, and there has been no significant flaw in Windows XP that I know of, no big attacks on Windows XP. So you can get all the updates. If you just run Windows XP Update, it should get all the updates, but that's it. You won't get any new ones because there aren't any new ones. There is one workaround, which is kind of interesting. You may or may not want to do this. Turns out Windows XP is widely used in what we call embedded systems, like ATM machines. It's not run on a regular computer, but it's running, in effect, a computer, an embedded computer. And those systems don't get updated. They can't go to Windows 8 or 9 or 10 or whatever. They're stuck on XP. So Microsoft continues to offer patches, believe it or not, for Windows XP for those kind of embedded systems. And if you change a registry key in your existing Windows XP system, you can pretend that you're one of those. You're an embedded version of Windows XP. And you will continue to get updates for Windows XP until 2019. Now, I really thought that Microsoft would cut this off, but they can't. You know what? They can't. Because they, you know, these ATMs and other things, gas station pumps and whatever, they have to keep working. Cash registers, things like that. So if you, it's a simple hack. You've got to do it in your registry. I'll put a link in the show notes at Tech Guy Labs to the information you need. You're basically telling your machine you're not Windows XP home. Your Windows XP embedded, and updates will continue to flow. We'll put it at techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Jane is on the line from Manhattan Beach, California. Hi, Jane.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling.
You bet. Yes. I have a tech that said for my PC that I should use weekly maintenance of desk cleanup, cleaner, and defragler, and then do Windows updates.
Get a new tech.
Aha! Oh, I'm glad you gave me some info.
Yeah, get a new tech. That guy is living in the 80s.
Oh.
So first of all,
yes,
you don't need to defrag anymore. Modern operating systems. I presume you're not using Windows 95 or 98.
Oh, correct.
Modern operating systems don't require defragmentation. They handle that, as they should have in the early days, but they were so primitive that they didn't. So don't worry about that. In fact, you can overdo these things without any benefit at all. You're exercising the disk. You're working it pretty hard without any benefit at all. It makes OCD people feel good. Oh, everything's in the nice position. The other thing is, in many computers now, we have solid-state drives, in which the word defragmentation is meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
So don't defrag. What's the cleanup program he recommended? Generally speaking, I don't recommend these either.
It's Disk Cleanup and C Cleaner.
Did he sell you this?
No, okay. It was a free installation he did.
Please get rid of that stuff.
Okay.
It's not bad. C Cleaner is a registry editor, registry cleaner. The theory being Microsoft made a horrific decision many moons ago when they decided to store settings for programs in a giant ball of a file called the registry. It's horrible. It's vulnerable. It's, you know, can grow too big. It's all sorts of problems. But nothing can clean it without a great risk of making your computer unbootable. So, you know, because no software, it's risky. So any program like CCleaner is going to be very judicious about what it does. In other words, it's not going to do much at all. admittedly, there are good things to do, but the risk of making an unbootable system is so high that just, you know, they err as they should on the side of caution, meaning it's useless. So don't do that. Well, I don't know anything about the disk cleanup. It probably deletes temp files. Windows does all of this, by the way, perfectly well. The Windows update, similar. You shouldn't. You don't need to go to Windows Update. Windows updates itself automatically.
And that's something you just mentioned about Windows 10 being.
There is another story. You're gonna. What Windows are you using?
7.
Yeah, well, you may someday. So the way Windows by default is set up is to install critical updates. That's really important. Those are security updates.
Yes.
And you never should turn that off. You should let that do that. There will guarantee be at least an update every second Tuesday of the month. And if there's something really horrific, there'll be another one, on demand. But when Microsoft tries to keep it to once a month, not once a week, once a month, the recommended updates are going to become problematic. Because Microsoft has announced we're going to start making Windows 10 a recommended update for Windows 7 and 8 users. Now, it's free, but you're going to wake up one day and suddenly you're not using Windows 7. You're using Windows 10. I don't think that's a bad thing.
For me, it's bad.
Okay.
It's compatible with the software that I run.
Well, then it would be bad. So yeah. Here's what you're going to have to do, and this is what the moron tech should have told you, is go into the Windows update settings. And keep critical updates automatic, but do turn off automatic updates of recommended. In other words, change the level of updates. Do not do automatic recommended because you don't want it to be suddenly Windows 10 someday.
Right.
You should, periodically look at the recommended updates because sometimes, most of the time, they're things like driver updates that you do want. So this means that manually you're going to have to it doesn't have to be often, but, every few months or so, just check and just see if there's any recommended updates that you'd like. They are not bug fixes or security updates. They are, updated software, generally. So your tech is wrong.
And I'm so glad you set me right.
Your tech, as is many people, is just working off kind of a script. That he's probably been doing for 20 years.
Uh-huh.
The older guy?
Over 60?
He's my age. So we've been around. And we remember the days when you did that. You had to make sure you deleted temp files because Windows didn't do it. Windows was so, feeble that it didn't do this stuff. But now any modern operating system, OS X, Windows, even Linux, defrags automatically. It's not an issue. Okay?
Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. And this is a big one, this recommended update. And I'm surprised Microsoft's not getting more heat for this. I think because it hasn't started, so people don't know. Get ready, because when it starts and you wake up and you've been using Windows 7 and all of a sudden you're using Windows 10 and Windows Media Center, if you use that's gone. Software that doesn't work with Windows 10 stops working. This is not good. This is not good. And I'm just kind of shocked that Microsoft's even contemplating this. This is how driven they are to getting everybody onto the Windows 10 platform. And it's in their interest because then developers will write for Windows 10. Everything moves along. And once they get you on Windows 10, it's going to be, it is better. And if you don't have a reason not to go to Windows 10, I would go to Windows 10. I would accept what Microsoft's about to do. The problem is that there are people legitimately who have reasons not to. And for them, this is not going to be a desirable outcome. And we're going to hear about it. I'm going to hear about it. I'm going to hear about it next week. Chris Marquardt's here, our photo guy. Hey, Chris Marquardt.
Hello.
He joins us each week to help us become better digital photographers. And it doesn't have to be with a fancy camera. It could be with a camera phone. So superpowers, hey?
Well, I've thought about this. You've most likely seen like a beautiful panorama or a great HDR or some panning shots where you move the camera or amazing picture of the sun or the moon, the stars or lightning. And I thought to make this into a little series, photographic superpowers. So
I
want to go into all of these different topics and explain how they're done. And
okay.
Then you can do them too.
Cool.
Sounds good?
Yep. Give me a photographic superpower.
Let's start with the first one. Well, it's kind of a week too late, but let's talk about fireworks.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful
I tried.
Photos. you've probably now by now seen a lot of them in your
Instagram, your
news,
and Facebook,
and everywhere you look.
Yep.
So let's get this started. Fireworks are, of course, the realm of the tripod. So you want the camera on something that doesn't move because you will need to expose for, it's a gut feel, about 10 seconds. So you want to be ready before the firework goes up. Then you want to expose. And then when the firework's done, you want to stop exposing. That's kind of how you do this. Now, you kind of, it's a bit scary, but you have to go into manual to set your camera to the M mode, which means the camera will, you will be completely in charge. The camera won't try to do anything automatic for you. And that's important because if you try to do this in automatic, you're going to fail. That's not going to work. So set your camera to manual mode, set it on a tripod, get a remote release, kind of a cable release, maybe even an infrared release, something that lets you trip the shutter without you having to touch the camera, because then you would move it and that would give you, well, could possibly with fireworks actually give you interesting effects. I've seen people who moved the camera while firework was going off, and that was cool looking, but it's not a controlled thing, so you will have to play with that. So shutter open, long exposures, use a remote release. Now, determining that shutter speed is, it takes a bit of trial and error. So read up online. There's lots of sources. But a good starting point is 10 seconds, an aperture of f11 and ISO 100. That's kind of a starting value. And then check on the back of your camera if that works or if it doesn't, and adjust accordingly. Now, the release is manual, the exposure is manual, but there are another few parameters that you want manual too. There's manual focus, because the camera will have a hard time focusing in the night because it needs something to focus on. And if there's nothing, that's a bit of a tough thing. So
I've had that problem.
Want to set your camera on.
Pulses the focus.
Well, yes, and you can set it to manual. What you can do is you can wait for the first fireworks to go up, focus on those, and then take the camera into manual focus mode. Switch it off from switch it away from automatic focus and leave it at that. That's kind of a good starting point there as well. White balance, you need that manually as well. Well, you don't need to, but it's kind of nicer if you do. If you have a camera that you can set to what we call Kelvin settings, 3600 Kelvin, that's a good spot to be on. 3200 to 3600 will result in quite pleasing colors from the fireworks. And here's one really important one. This is really important. Set the display of your camera to its lowest possible brightness. You know, when you shoot during sunlight, you shoot during the day, you have the display blast at you because it has to. When you do the same thing at night, it will still blast at you and it will give you a false sense of brightness. So it will just be too bright for the night. Set it to the lowest brightness possible. And this way you can kind of trust it. Still, it would help if you learn to read a histogram. But this is a good starting point. Set the display to lowest brightness and then expose. If you don't want to time this with a remote release, what you can also do is open that shutter for longer. Like if you have a remote release that you can actually lock in place. So you can open the shutter and leave it open for a few minutes, because here's the trick how to get more than just one of these firework displays into your shot: by opening the shutter and then holding a hat in front of the lens. And whenever a rocket goes up, some fireworks go up, you lift the hat away from the camera, and when it's done, put the hat back in front of it. And this way you can get 3, 4, 5 of those displays into one shot. You can also do this in post-production, by the way. You can also use something like Photoshop or Affinity Photo and other photo tools and kind of stack those on top of each other. So you would have two different photos, one with the fireworks in the left and one in the right, and put them into one photo. And it's a bit of cheating, but it will make for more impressive photo.
You don't have to tell anybody you did it.
Well, and I would bet that a certain percentage of the fireworks displays and the fireworks photos that you find out there
do that,
are probably done that way. So that's pretty, it's pretty easy when you start doing it. It sounds daunting. So everyone who wants to listen to this again, I think you put this online so everyone can check back and try these things
but
out next time
tips.
There's a firework.
Well, the nice thing about fireworks, at least in the U.S., is there's a fireworks display around the corner all the time. It seems like used to be it was just on the 4th of July. But now you go to a ballpark, you go to a county fair. Our local county fair has a fireworks display every night. So,
by the way, it also helps to get there early so you can actually check out where the fireworks are going up. So get there early just to get a bit of an idea where the fireworks going to rise into the sky. Because if you're in the wrong spot, that's another thing. If you do want to compose these, not just the fireworks, but maybe include some foreground elements, some landscapes, some buildings, some landmarks, that will certainly make this a more compelling picture.
The tripod's a very good tip. I think that's important.
Tripod or beanbag or something that lets you fix the camera.
I have to say one of the advantages of digital photography is that you can always see, and I'm sad to say, I spent a lot of time at my fireworks, 4th of July fireworks, looking at the back of my camera. Did I get that one? No. So you can try. You can experiment. You get a better idea of what you're getting. You can at least see it right away. That's kind of nice. Imagine those poor pioneers who had to use film and wouldn't know what that image was going to look like for another week.
Well, I would argue they were probably the better photographers because they had to learn what they were doing.
Right.
And they had to be able to nail it on the spot without knowing what would come out. So
no second chance.
I think film photography makes you a bit more thorough in this, in this respect.
Yeah, I think you're right. Chris Marquardt is our photographic guru. We follow him. He's our sensei. And you can find out more at his website, Discover the Top Floor. He does workshops. There's lots of images there. He's got a great book on film photography. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Drew in St. Louis. Hello, Drew.
Yeah, hey, Leo. Good to talk to you. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
Okay. So I have a question. I'm going to start straight with the question, but then I have a little explaining I need to do.
Okay.
So my question is, I would like to know where I can go to download free and legal copies of old Microsoft operating systems like DOS, Windows 95, Windows 98, Windows XP, and so forth. And here's the explanation. So I have a laptop that's like 6 years old, and it came with Windows 7. And recently, I reformatted my hard drive and reinstalled Windows 7 and then immediately upgraded to Windows 10 using the free upgrade that has since expired. So I have a nice, fresh copy of Windows 10. And you know those CD-ROM binders that you can use to store all your...
Yeah, I have one of those. Yeah, or I used to. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a few of those old software binders, and I have some old programs that I would like to install, but I really don't want to cruft up my nice new installation of Windows 10 with old software that's going to, you know, try to install like QuickTime 2.0 for Windows or, you know, like DirectX 5 or something like that, you know. So what I thought I would do was down, and actually I did this, I downloaded a program called VirtualBox.
Yeah.
That's a virtual machine manager that allows
it's free too, which is neat. It comes from Oracle and allows you to run other operating systems underneath Windows.
Right. And I thought I could maybe try, you know, dual booting instead, like dual booting Windows 10 with an older version of Windows. But I decided to try virtualization.
No, a VM is a good way to do this, I think.
So here's the problem. I looked through my old software binders, and I think I must have thrown away my old Windows 98 installation CD and my old Windows XP installation CD.
So there's some issues associated with what you want to do. There are places you can find this. In fact, even Microsoft offers older versions of their operating systems to developers. If you get an MSDN subscription, you can do that. That's pricey. But that's because developers often want to test, you know, cross operating system compatibility, make sure it still works with older versions. You can also, and this would, you, there are websites like oldversion.com and oldapp.com that offer old versions of programs. Those are not legal. In some cases, the programs are old and nobody wants them. But in the case of Windows, that those Microsoft aggressively maintains those copyrights. But you can also buy copies on eBay, and this would be safer because the problem with these old apps sites, you don't know where they got that ISO and is it real and maybe it's modified and hacked and you don't know. But if you go to eBay or you know other sites that sell used or old copies of operating systems, you could often get a Windows 95 disk. I think somebody's saying Amazon still has Windows 95 disks for sale. Certainly eBay would have 95, 98, XP, because there's lots of people with those disks and they'll sell them. Here's the problem. It may not be a problem for you, but there's no activation on those. You can't. That Microsoft's taken the servers down to authenticate those. So even if you got a serial number that was clean and never been used, which is unlikely in this case, you know, somebody's been using this, it would not activate, which means in 30 days it would start to complain and then maybe a few weeks after that it would slow down and eventually would stop working because Microsoft doesn't want you to use these old versions. Now, that's not a big deal with a VM because what you do is take a snapshot at day one and then when it starts to get tired, you just delete it and start using the snapshot and you get another – it resets the 30 days. So you can absolutely do this. What's the oldest version you'd want to get?
Well, DOS.
Yeah. That's an interesting. Where would you get DOS? Somebody's got it, right? And DOS doesn't need to be activated. There's the good news. So there is a free DOS, which is out there. It's an open source project to emulate DOS. And it actually works fairly well. DOSBox or FreeDOS. Both will do DOS. DOS is easy to emulate because it's not a very sophisticated program. Windows would get a little bit harder. But I would try FreeDOS and see if it will do what you want. Then you're completely legal. And you don't even, I mean, you know, you can use it in a VM anytime you want. But if you need it, I bet you somebody's got it. I mean, sure. And, you know, on eBay and other places, I bet you people are selling. I'd have to look. Old versions of DOS. Somebody's saying if you go to ftp.microsoft.com, you can. I don't know if that's true. That would make me happy because then you'd be getting a legitimate copy. DOS is a little challenging because DOS goes back away. I think FreeDOS would be the best way to do it. Windows 95 and 98. I don't even know if they had activations. I don't think Microsoft was using the Windows Genuine Advantage activation servers yet. That started with XP. So you just need a serial number, but you need a serial number that works. I think there are ways around that too. The biggest issue is using these old operating systems is a little bit risky. DOS, not so much, but Windows XP, for instance, there are still exploits floating around in the wild because there's a lot of XP machines out there, unpatched and vulnerable. So the answer is yes, you can get them from Microsoft legitimately. That would be the best way to do it. Or you can, we'll put a link in the show notes to some legitimate ways to get it. Or you can go to the sites, or you could try to buy somebody's old disks. There are old disks out there. Chat room has all sorts of sneaky tricks, by the way, for getting around activation. So if you head over there, maybe they can help you in ways that I prefer not to, if you know what I mean. Thanks for the call. It's an interesting question. You know, there's a whole, you know, culture preserving old video games. They say, this is our art. This is our, you know, old movies for a long time, people thought, that's an old movie. Nobody's going to want that. Now we realize, we should have saved those. We should preserve those. Many movies have been lost, but now there's an active effort to preserve those. And there are people who say, you know, the video games of the 80s, even the 70s, those are our culture just as much as an old movie as we should preserve those. And even though the copyright issue is kind of tangled, I think there's a, you know, if you go to the Internet Archives, where they're trying to save everything, including the old Internet pages, they have old video games, hundreds of them, that they've preserved because that's our culture. That's our history. Terry in Burbank. Hello, Terry.
Hi. Hi.
Hi.
Leo, I'm hoping you can help me out. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
I am a Disney Imagineering artist, and my...
Wow, wait a minute. Wow, I just have to bow down. We're not worthy. That's got to be the best job for an artist in the world.
It's the best. It is the best.
That is so cool.
My life has kind of excelled beyond my computer, and for the past 8 months, I've been a little challenged in that I have a MacBook Air, but it's from 2011.
Time for a new computer.
Yeah, and that's my challenge. Right now, I'm working on a MacBook Air and an iPad.
Yeah.
And I've talked...
You know what I really want you to buy?
What's that?
Can you wait till December 15th?
I can actually wait till next year because I don't want to buy something right off the press. I want to hear
good
what people like yourself.
So I've ordered it, and I'm really excited about it, and you're going to think I'm wacky. It's Microsoft's new computer. It's called the Surface Studio.
Surface Studio.
And it's for you.
It is.
Yes. It has a pen.
Okay.
With, you know, touch sensitive, pressure sensitive, very good pen with an eraser on the top. It also comes with a knob, a dial, and software that is dial aware that you can use to as a palette selector or as an undo button. In fact, I've seen artists draw with the pen in one hand and the dial in the other hand, and they can use it as an undo. It's a touch screen. It's 28 inches. And it tilts down to 20 degrees like a drafting table. So you can hover. It's in a very natural way, just like your drawing table. You can hover over it, draw on it, has very good palm rejection. Now, Microsoft just announced this, and they're shipping later this year. I ordered one, so I will give you a review. But I'm not an artist. I'm tempted to send it to you and get your review.
Oh, I'd love it.
So what do you do? What do you draw? What are you doing amusement park rides? Or
actually, yes, I designed the Dragon's Lair in Paris and Big Thunder Paris. If you go there, you can actually walk on, photograph, ride on, and experience my attractions. And
I love this. And what software do you use? 3D Studio? What do you use to design?
No. I actually sculpted in the full dimensions, and then it's digitized and sent to the locations of where they need to be.
Oh, so the computer, you're not using the computer to design then?
I'm using the computer to illustrate. What's happened is I'm a collectible artist as well, so I use the computer to do the artwork and illustrations that represent pieces that I'm going to be doing in the future.
And are you using the iPad Pro for that now, or what do you do now?
No iPad Pro, because I'm not a fan of it, Leo. It seems to be very expensive and very specialized, and it does one thing. And what I'd really like to have, my little iPad, I have an iPad, I don't know what it's called, like the iPad, the slim iPad.
The mini.
I have, and
yeah,
I love the mini. Well, it's not mini.
No, the Air. You have the Air, yeah.
Yeah, and I love the fact that it's light, it's easy, you know,
this is a full computer. I'm talking about a...
It's like crazy stupid.
This is a desktop computer. It's huge.
Yeah, and I don't mind desktop, but I'm really kind of into I've been looking at the Surfaces, and
the Surface Pro 4 is the notebook size, the iPad size, it's actually a little bigger, and it has a keyboard, so it's a full Windows 10 computer, but with all of the drawing capabilities, and I think a richer collection of applications for what you do than an iPad has, frankly.
Yeah, what excites me about the studio you're talking about is the problem I had with the Surface is that when I went to the location and talked to them about it, they said if you take it apart, the video card is in the wrong part.
You're looking at the Surface. I know what you're looking at, the Surface Book.
I
have one of those. In fact, I'm holding it right now. This is weird because it looks like a laptop, but if you press the eject button, the screen comes off, and it's just like a tablet. In fact, that screen is identical to the Surface Pro 4 screen. But you're right, the GPU is in the keyboard. In fact, the second battery is in the keyboard. It doesn't have great battery life without
it.
Yeah, the Surface Pro 4 is not that way. Yeah, no, that's no good. The Surface Pro 4 is not that way, though. It's everything is in the tablet.
So I'm leaning towards the Wacom companion, but the problem with buying it now, I told them I didn't want to buy it now.
No. In fact,
if
you're looking at the Cintiq or the Companion, you should look at the Surface. You're the person this was designed for, the Surface Studio. It's designed for you. Just go online and look at the videos and see if it...
I will.
Yeah, I think that this is made for you. Now, mine, I ordered it right away, and they said December 15th. So it's another month. But I think you're smart. If you're not in a big hurry, wait, see the reviews, see what people say. But, boy, I bet you... Call Microsoft, say, I'm a Disney Imagineer. Would you just send me one? Because we'd like to look at this to see if it would work. They would love that.
Okay, I will do that.
They made a big deal. They went and they took the Surface Pro 4 to Pixar, to the animators at Pixar, and did a whole video of them using it and raving about it and talking about it. This is you're the group. Microsoft has decided to steal from Apple.
Yeah.
Apple has kind of, unfortunately... abandon the creative professional. It was a natural relationship, but they haven't updated their and now the new stuff, it still doesn't have touch. And Microsoft,
it's like the tortoise and the hare, Leo, isn't it? The hare is sitting there, you know, relaxing, and the tortoise just keeps on plugging. And then the next thing you know, the tortoise. I never thought I would go back to PC. I know. PCs are just unbelievable, some of the things that I've seen them be doing that I'm saying to myself, it may be time to go back. And I have no problem switching between
because
learned. I cut my teeth on a PC.
And the programs you're going to use are the same. You live in the program, so you know it's not. You don't even know you're using a Windows computer.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know the difference anymore because that this touch screen thing, and
that's
if
the
I can
bingo.
Consolidate it a little bit, I would be much happier because to try and make sure everything speaks to each other is a little bit of a challenge.
Apple decided that they were going to go to the next generation of computing, which would be tablet, and we're never going to put touch in our desktops. The desktops will continue for people who can't do everything they need to do on the tablet until such time as the tablet can do everything, and then we'll kill the desktops. And that's going to be what's going to happen. Microsoft didn't have the luxury. They didn't have a good tablet. So they had to make Windows 10 work and Windows 8, quite notoriously, quite ugly, work with touch. But they've gone through, the flames, and they've emerged with, I think, a very compelling product line. And now, I got to tell you, one bit of disclosure on the Surface Studio starts at $3,000.
Yeah, that's what you know what? But you can see that my MacBook Air is 2011.
Yeah.
So I stay with it if I invest in something that can give me a few years.
I think this is, you are the person this product was invented for. And frankly, if I'm working at Microsoft and listening to this, I'm going to find you. I'm going to say, Terry, call the Imagineers. Get Terry a Surface Studio stat. You're the right person for this.
I appreciate that. I really do, because that's the thing that I've progressed so much. Before, all I did was use my laptop to send a.
No, this is for you. This is for
and
hey,
email.
Terry. I'm out of time. I gotta run. Let me know what you decide on, though. I'd love to hear, but I do have to run, unfortunately. But it's the end of the show. Time flies when you're having fun. Have a great Geek Week. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts. For this show, we talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.